You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 280 of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining me this week is the most famous podcaster in Canada, co-host Scott Wright. Welcome back to the show, Scott.
Thank you, Tom.
Graced by your presence. Yeah. And someone who needs more room in his garage for a CNC machine, co-host Kevin Johnson.
Ah, yes. I was very upset UPS delivered one of five boxes of the CNC on Saturday. But here's the thing I find funny, and I've not posted pictures of it yet, but the box, all six sides have a sticker on it because it's the electronics, the brain, the Maso controller, stuff like that. All six sides have a sticker that says, fragile, this side up. So I don't know
which side.
I brought it in the house and the UPS guy set it on the front step. And when I looked, I saw the sticker on the side that said this side up. I'm like, oh, he put it on the wrong way. And then I noticed the other sticker, and then the other, and I picked it up. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what to do with this.
As they say in Italian, fragile.
Fragile. Yes.
Yes. That's right. So, well, welcome back to you both, my famous co-hosts in your own ways. And we have an exciting show for everyone this week. And first, I want to make an announcement that if you've been sharing your Netflix password with people outside of your immediate family, those days are now coming to an end. So I'm sorry, because Netflix is now implementing new controls to prevent sharing of login credentials outside of that immediate family, which is basically they're coming from the same IP address. This is kind of what they're doing, right?
The idea is you have an account. When you signed up for the account, and I'm not arguing for or against, I'm just going to
say,
when you signed up for the account, you said, I agree that I'm only going to share this with people who live with me.
Because you read the terms of service.
Of course I did. Didn't you? I understand why Netflix is doing this. I get it, right? Like, you're violating their terms of service. That's bad, blah, 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 blah. And it's our own fault because we made it a meme about sharing. Like
this is true.
One Netflix account in Florida and everybody uses it type of thing.
It's Kevin's, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not Kevin's. Kevin has a Netflix account. The part that I'm a little concerned about with this, because they've stated that they will take into account people who travel. Like, I travel for work.
Yeah.
And I use Netflix. I very often will be sitting in a hotel room working on something with Netflix playing in the background. I am concerned. Now, I understand they say they're going to handle that and how, you have to check in every...
Yeah, verification process.
And that shouldn't be... But I will also point out that I used to subscribe to Hulu's live TV and I stopped because of this exact problem. And Hulu said they would handle it, they would deal with it. But I got blocked constantly on Hulu. And the part that irritated me was... I understood why they did it for live TV, but then when I went to watch things that were not live, I still got blocked. It was like they blocked the entire, and I actually reached out to Hulu and said, okay, I get it, right? Like, I'm not home, you're blocking it because of this reason. I disagree, whatever, but I understand it. But here is something that I had access to before I signed up for live TV, and I don't have access to it anymore. And they were like, well, yeah, that's because it's live TV. No, it's not. Friends, I never watched Friends, but using it as an example that most people should know, isn't live TV. It hasn't been live TV in decades. But I don't know. I don't know where I fall down on this one. I think I fall down on, okay, cool, it makes sense. Right? Like, it, the company has an agreement. You agreed to it. You're violating those rules.
Yeah.
I lean toward agreeing that the company has and should enforce those rules.
I actually... Yeah, I actually think that this will probably enhance security of people's accounts, actually.
Yes.
Because you're now, they're obviously putting in more like two-factor authentication type of checks and things that naturally are, I get it, right? They're trying to increase their bottom line. They're losing money.
Yeah,
I think the side effect too is that accounts are just going to be more inherently secure now, which in my opinion is always a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with you with that. The issue I have with it is solely one around my own inconvenience, right?
And that's going to happen, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
I am driving to Orlando this afternoon.
Yeah.
Because I'm speaking to give you an idea of when we're recording, I'm speaking tomorrow night at the Orlando OWASP chapter. So I'm driving down tonight and I will probably turn on Netflix when I get to the hotel. We will see. So next week, ask me how it works.
We will find out. Yes. So Scott.
Yes, Tom.
Why don't we go to our favorite segment, which is Aware Much?
Yes, Tom. Giggle, giggle.
I just love how Tom says it. I really do. It every time it makes me laugh.
Well, it's time to discuss security awareness issues, as you can tell by the topic of the segment. So Aware Much is brought to you by ClickArmor, the interactive security awareness platform that helps you build an engaging awareness program where employees really learn how to spot and avoid threats in ways that traditional learning management systems and video-based training can't. So we've debated whether ChatGPT and AI will be good or bad for security a few times on this show, right?
Once or twice, yeah.
And of course, it will be both. But even being the optimist that I am, I can't help but point out that there are some good examples of how we need to be careful using AI. So to avoid the risks of losses when we overuse it or depend on it too much for important issues. So today's story is an interesting one, because you'd think that when you ask ChatGPT a basic historical question, that it'll provide you with some true factual information at least, right? But for example, in this legal dispute between an airline and a passenger, the passenger's lawyer submitted a list of precedents for cases that supported their claims. Unfortunately, those cases provided by ChatGPT never existed. So do you guys think that this is an example of over-reliance on the output of an AI program?
No. I don't think it's over-reliance.
Okay.
I think it is completely an example of somebody not understanding what ChatGPT is.
True.
Okay. And therefore over-relying on it.
I can agree with that. Yes. I'm joking about not being an over-reliance, but yeah. I'm not at the same time.
Yeah. It's clearly not lack of understanding. Yeah.
First off, I am not going to question the credentials of this attorney, but I'm going to question the credentials of this attorney that they filed a document with the court and signed the document saying, I attest that everything in here is accurate. And they didn't attest that it was, they didn't actually verify that it was all accurate.
Yeah.
To me, bluntly, I would hope that the bar at this attorney's location, you know, whatever the state bar, I'm blanking on what state the attorney is in, should be filing some type of, I'm not going to say they should be disbarred. I don't think that, but there
otherwise
should
be, the bar is too low, right?
Yes, the bar is way too low. And I actually, David Matthew Zandarian, I totally screwed up his name, I'm sure, and Josh Marpet were talking on Facebook about this article last week. And I actually responded. And I think, and then somebody else responded to another thread to the same article and proved my point. I think this is an example that we have talked about here. And it is an awareness problem, is that we use the wrong words to describe what ChatGPT is.
Mm.
And I've given up on fighting the AI because it's not AI. We know that, but I've given up on that. But I loved the response from, I think it was Josh Marpet, who's a great guy, but he's wrong in this case. he's like, well, ChatGPT hallucinated those articles. Like, no, ChatGPT did not hallucinate anything.
It was trained somehow.
Yeah.
It
was trained.
It made them up. That it gave output that matched the large language model it was trained on. There's no requirement for accuracy in that large language model. There's no, right? So when we say things like it hallucinated, we are perpetuating the lack of awareness on what ChatGPT really is. And I get it. We are not going to explain to every technophobe what this means. We'll never be able to explain to Congress what this means. They don't care. They just want sound bites. But as long as we continue to use language that implies intelligence to something that is not actually intelligent, we are going to have examples where people will rely on and use the output as if it's completely factual. And I would argue we have the same problem when we rely on what other people say, when we rely on books that we don't get. Like, hey, I read this book and it said that the what was the article? I remember it from a few years ago, that the best way to get vitamin D was to go in your backyard naked and ensure that your anus was exposed to the sun. Okay. This was something, and it was in a book. Right. And I had a friend who was like, because I had low vitamin D, doctor. Yeah, my vitamin D was low enough that my doctor actually said to me, you know, you live in Florida, right? And I said, what does that mean? And she was like, you get vitamin D from the sun. And a friend of mine's like, oh, I read this book and it said, go in the backyard with naked and expose your anus. Like it had to actually hit your anus. I don't know why. That was what this book said. Do you believe that? I don't. Right? And
no.
So we have this problem with relying on things, but because we treat it as intelligent, because we explain it. And while I was having this, not argument, but disagreement with David and Josh, somebody else writes, yeah, this is one of my problems with ChatGPT. It doesn't learn from its mistake. I will tell it something isn't right. And then the next time I ask it questions, it will say the same thing. And it's like, of course it doesn't learn from its mistake. It's not intelligent, right? And this lawyer, I totally agree with you, Scott, joking around about over-reliance, but I agree with you that they over-relied on the thing. I think the core problem here, though, is they signed their name to a document saying it was completely accurate.
Well, it's like they put
verifying it. It was accurate. And then if you read further, they actually went back to ChatGPT and said, hey, by the way, is this case real? And ChatGPT, totally real. Of course it is.
I think it's more than just attributing it to having intelligence. We're actually giving it more credit because if a regular, if a lawyer associate told you, oh yeah, there's these cases that I can think of, would you take his word for it or would you go look them up?
Pacer. I absolutely agree with you, Scott. I almost said Josh. I'm sorry. I totally agree with you. If somebody, but this is tying it all the way back to awareness, right? This is the same thing we talk about with awareness problems. If you get an email that says, go get credit cards and send them gift cards, pay your taxes with Amazon gift cards, because that's what the IRS is using nowadays. Maybe due to the debt ceiling agreement, they'll accept Amazon gift cards.
Probably.
If somebody walked up to you and said, oh my God, I have an emergency. You're going to go to jail if you don't give me Amazon gift cards. You'd be like, what are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah.
And show my age. But because it came in an email, you're like, oh, must be true. It came with ChatGPT, must be true is asinine.
Clearly, this was a costly mistake caused by misunderstanding of the limitations of the technology. So don't depend on AI for answers that have a high value for you when without verifying them. So this segment of Aware Much was brought to you by ClickArmor, the interactive security awareness platform that helps you engage employees through proven techniques that some say are magic, but they're really just the techniques used by video games to engage people. And we prove that and show you how to do that. One use case where ClickArmor is clearly adding value is remediation. So let's say you've got a segment of your employee base that is constantly failing phishing simulations. And let's assume that you're doing those simulations responsibly and not overusing them or abusing them. in ways that have adverse consequences that we've talked about here before. Let's say people are just clicking on things that they should really know how to avoid. Most organizations just put those people through the same training they took in the first place. So we don't really have a high expectation of better results. They'll be bored, they won't learn anything new, and they won't understand what you mean by watch out for suspicious emails. You get the idea. So what if you could engage people with highly interactive lessons and exercises where they can practice in a safe place and see how they are improving, get immediate feedback on what they can do better, and have a more positive experience that actually improves security culture? That's what we have. And we have special pricing for remediation programs now that will be complementary to any value that you're getting from a solution that you might already be locked into. So that's just one example of how ClickArmor's interactive experience adds value. So you can request a free trial at clickarmor.ca/trial and see how we provide immediate value for your awareness program, even if you're already using another platform. That's it for this segment of Aware Much.
Spies are infiltrating your Discord, Reddit, and WhatsApp. Can you believe it? There are spies from a lot of these intelligence firms have apparently invaded all of these different chat systems to gather intelligence.
You mean those attractive people that are approaching me aren't real?
Oh, I know. I know. This is breaking news, too, because we've never heard of this before. Right, guys? I mean,
No. And you never gave talks.
No.
Almost 20 years ago.
20 years ago, right?
On this exact technique.
I brought this story up because I find it a little bit funny that, you know, okay, these first of all, the government, the FBI, and second, all of these intelligence firms, they've been doing this since the beginning of time. Yeah. So this is nothing new that, you know, some people are like freaking out that, oh my gosh, like the FBI could be watching my chats in Discord. Yeah. What else is new, right? I don't know.
I don't know this Li Fang person. They refer to themselves as an independent journalist, investigative newsletter, and stuff like that. That all sounds really good. I don't know this person, so please, in no way do I want people to take this as me saying, oh, look at this idiot. I guess my main question is, welcome, how did you decide to go back to 2005? Like, every TV show about the cops and the FBI and the NSA talks about undercover agents. Every TV show.
Like, of course.
This is, why would you, and I'm not saying it's okay. The core thing I'm wondering is, why did they think in 2023 this should surprise people? Well, and then I would say, I guess they're right because I've seen people talking about it like, oh my God, did you know that?
It's so, you know what it is? It's this, and the article also talks about like the potential violation of civil liberties. And all of these things. And I guess I go back to the way that government agencies and these companies gather intelligence, this has not changed ever, right? Yeah. They're always going to be undercover. There's always going to be accounts that are fake accounts used by somebody else to gather intelligence. Yeah. I mean, this happens. I mean, you remember we had Robert Kerbeck on about corporate spying. It's the same stuff. It's like there's companies that spy on other companies. This happens all the time, not just governments. So where do you draw the line? And I don't think this is something that you can necessarily stop or put laws around.
Especially like, when there's already laws that are starting to open up encryption, right? And, you know.
I think, Scott, that's a wonderful point, right? Is I would rather... I'm less concerned about dark web monitoring company so-and-so, which, by the way, I use one. You know, we're a partner of Flare. We use Flare. We sell their service. We use it ourselves. We're very happy with it. And I assume that Flair has people that sign in under fake accounts to get this data.
How else are they getting that intel?
Exactly. I'm way less concerned about that and its abuse of civil liberties. And I'm not saying I'm not concerned about that. I'm saying I'm way less concerned about that than exactly what you brought up, that the EU is trying to undermine encryption, that the US
definitely bigger problems
has discussed undermining. If we want to talk about hardcore problems that will affect civil liberties, that encryption weakening is way higher.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, doesn't get anywhere near the attention. I would recommend to Li Fang write an article about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I'm not disagreeing with the article you wrote. I'm not arguing, right? But the idea that we are going to undermine encryption scares me to the core. And I will say that being one of the most public people about my life, I don't mean that I'm famous. I mean, I don't treat any aspect of my life as private. I assume people have access to it. I assume that people know, like, you know, the conversation this we just had an entire conversation where Tom just throws out, well, Kevin doesn't have enough room in his garage. Why does Tom know that? Because Kevin posted pictures from inside his garage on social media, publicly open.
Yeah. No, I know, Kevin. I used one of my fake accounts to gather that intel totally secretly without your knowledge. Okay.
It's okay because I used one of my fake accounts to post anti Tom Esten stuff. So,
it's
totally reasonable.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't care that Flair has fake accounts, because guess what? So do I.
Good stuff. Oh, such a fun debate. Well,
yep.
Well, I think that's all we have time for today, gentlemen. But thank you as always. And for all of you, thanks for supporting the show, by the way.
Thank you
for subscribing. We're actually very close to getting 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So that is ticking on up.
My dream is to get, and I don't even need to have it because I assume it would go to you, but is to get one of those silver YouTube plaques. I don't know why.
I think those would be
cool to have. I think it's like 100,000 subscribers.
It, so we're something ridiculous close. That we'll probably never achieve. Sure. Yep. Sounds awesome. All right. Well, we'll talk to you all again next week. Thanks for listening or watching. If you like this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app. To catch all the latest from the podcast, visit us at sharedsecurity.net. Follow us on Mastodon at sharedsecurity, on Twitter at sharedsec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit.